opening chime to start the show. So anyway, welcome to the Mad Scientists Exposed radio show. And we like to talk about exposing all the mad things going on in science, because the new slogan on our website is, of course we trust science, it's scientists we don't trust. So there's been some news in the week that's hitting the top headlines. One is that Zika is arriving in the U.S., and the ABC ran a story. CDC officials say that thousands have arrived in the U.S. with Zika, and so there's always a chance, I guess, that that these people will be having children with serious cranial deformities, smaller brain, smaller head, they call it microcephaly. It says federal health officials today said they believe thousands of people may have contracted the Zika virus before returning to the U.S., and they remain concerned that the virus might commence ongoing transmission in the U.S. And from what I understand, there's only two ways to get the Zika virus. One is to be in South America and be bitten by an infected mosquito and then carry it back to the U.S. And the other way is, I guess they're coming out now that it can be sexually transmitted. So I guess it becomes the new STD or something. there's also some stories out there that the microcephaly doesn't actually come from the mosquito, but it might come from a pesticide that they're using to keep the mosquito population down. And that particular pesticide is designed to impair the neurological development of the mosquitoes, of the mosquito larvae. And that gets into the water system and people ingest it, and it begins infecting human young instead, or also. So there's different theories out there. The World Health Organization denies it's the pesticide. They say, oh, no, it's the mosquito. But, we've had Zika virus around for decades and decades, and why it just suddenly morphed into this thing that causes such horrible brain damage. It's a freak thing of nature, or it was cooked up in a lab somewhere. There's all kinds of theories now, because there are enough of us out there that don't trust scientists anymore, and there are provably weaponized diseases out there, that this could be anything. And so time is going to unfold this story, and I don't know how else to describe it. There was a lot of talk at first on the Zika, on a vaccine for Zika. And, I remember when I was young and the rubella vaccine first came out, and I had already had the mumps themselves. The rubella vaccine came out, and I had that vaccine because I was going into what they call childbearing age, and I didn't marry till many years later. But rubella is known to cause birth defects, in particular mental brain birth defects in children who are in the mother's pregnancy. If she contracts rubella before the birth, then there can be some brain damage in the child. And there's an old story about that. There was a movie star, and gee, I'll have to look up the name, that actually happened to a movie star. One of her fans approached her. She knew she was contagious with rubella, but she approached her anyway, knowing that the star was pregnant. So she never knew where she got that rubella until many years later that fan approached her again. And confessed to having been so enthralled with her that she, came to see her while she was sick with rubella. But, the star never told her that, yes, her child had indeed been affected and detrimentally for her whole life. That she just, there was no point at that point. The damage was done. Everybody had gone on with their lives, and she did the best she could do for her child, and that's how it went. But, so that's, at the time that I took the vaccine for rubella, I understood, the problem with it. And so I never contracted rubella myself. And so it's kind of like the Zika thing. It's kind of like the same thing. But now there's a big headline at Scientific American: Zika vaccine could solve one problem while stoking another. Concerns growing about a Zika autoimmune disease link are casting a shadow over vaccine development. And if you go down into the story, it says, when Thomas Monmouth, an expert on vaccines combating mosquito-borne diseases, thinks about developing an inoculation against Zika virus, he has a major concern, Guillain-Barre syndrome. The rare autoimmune disease can lead to paralysis, and recently it appears to be occurring more frequently than usual within at least 8 countries and territories reporting Zika outbreaks. Mounting evidence suggests exposure to the mosquito-borne Zika is the culprit. Now that Guillain-Barre, GBS syndrome, is stoking concerns that a vaccine designed to protect patients against Zika could inadvertently provoke more cases of the autoimmune condition. Well, you know, Guillain-Barre is listed in the package inserts of many vaccines, in particular the flu vaccine, the annual flu vaccine. And so where is this concern about that? I mean, the agenda has certainly stepped up in the United States for everybody getting the flu vaccine every single year. And to me, that's just every shot that you take is a game of Russian roulette. And you either get this horrible disease or you might luck out until the next year. You know, there are some stories that the predominant cases in some hospitals in the intensive care unit. Those are often Guillain-Barre. And, you know, I guess I should find that story and put it on my site. You know, it's just Guillain-Barre is a horrible thing, and it can be very, very horrible. I believe it's more people out there than is generally discussed out on the public. There are some videos by Dr. Suzanne Humphreys that, you know, Guillain-Barre is actually polio renamed. And, you know, polio went through a whole bunch of redefinitions from the describing the symptoms, you know, about pain and paralysis and fever, whatever the symptoms were. And they've redefined it until, you know, okay, maybe there's a particular virus for it or maybe there's not. So, you know, but the symptoms themselves are the same as Guillain-Barre. And so, okay, I guess we don't take polio vaccines in the U.S. anymore, but they're still pushing them around the world. And other vaccines are creating Guillain-Barre symptoms. So we're really just creating polio, and it just went away because we renamed it. So I found out an interesting thing this week. Somebody told me I got into a debate on Facebook, of course, you know, and it was a friend of a doctor friend that I actually know in real life. I know the doctor in real life. He's a friend of mine. I've known him for decades. You know, we played in orchestra together and things like that. And, you know, so I have respect for him. He's a wonderful, wonderful musician. And I presume he's a wonderful doctor but I've never been to him, but, as a doctor, but he's very pro-vaccine. And so, you know, we got into it once or twice on Facebook, and now we just kind of like tolerate each other's articles going by without saying much, because that's about all we can do. But, you know, he put up one the other day that was a study in the Philippines that they're finding that taking the flu vaccine, at least in that study, reduces the chances of later developing dementia in certain age groups. And I just found that unbelievable. And I'm just like, well, does it reduce your chances of developing dementia because you die sooner? I mean, that would certainly be a factor in reducing the number of dementia cases after a group of people take vaccines. But, you know, I didn't answer that. You know, and I kind of apologized. I said, look, I'm sorry, Mike. I trust science. It's scientists I don't trust, you know, and I didn't elaborate. But really, the article was a bunch of gobbledygook statistics, you know, and how do you group it this way and how do you group it that way, and I just couldn't swallow it all. I mean, you know, I have a math background, and it just, I just thought it was that the article was a shell game. So I commented on that on my website, Mad Scientists Expose. That's scientists plural. You know, I'm not the mad scientist exposing myself. It's you know, mad scientists plural exposed. So not exposed. And anyway, so I discussed that a little bit on my website there. And anyway, this lady came on and she goes, vaccines are a good thing and blah, blah, blah. And you should read your history. And she was gonna chew me out, you know. And she goes, my grandfather got scarlet fever and thank goodness he survived. But I had the vaccine, so I never got scarlet fever. Well, you know, I had scarlet fever once when I was really small. And I looked it up. There has never been a vaccine developed for scarlet fever. So she's telling me to do my research, and she doesn't even know that much. And she was trying to use it as an argument. So I came back, you know, and I kind of soft-pedaled it because Mike is our mutual friend. But I said, you did not have a scarlet fever vaccine. There is no such thing. And I went on about other issues in the vaccine world. I quoted her some National Institutes of Health articles and things like that, because she went on about tuberculosis. And National Institutes of Health, it says tuberculosis, yes, there's a vaccine for it, but it responds incredibly well to vitamin C, and even the National Institutes of Health said so. you know, anyway, so, you know, it's a big world out there, a lot of convoluted misinformation. I know there's a lot of people out there that really don't like Google, and I don't like Google's connections to governments because they do try to sway your search findings. But if you know what you're looking for and you phrase it correctly, they can't defeat it. You find it. I mean, I generally will Google something, and it'll take me to the National Institutes of Health, and I'll find my article about, you know, vitamin C being very potent against tuberculosis. And, you know, so we now know that if you're dying of tuberculosis, you're really dying of malnutrition. And that seems to be the case for so many, many diseases and conditions where, you know, good nutrition makes a healthy immune system and you can fight things off better. So I don't know where this Zika thing is headed. The one thing I really, really worry about is if they do come out with a vaccine for it and try to mandate it for pregnant women. They're really, really pestering pregnant women now to take the DTaP vaccine. And that's got horrible side effects, not just for the mother, but for children, that, you know, that can happen. They don't happen to everybody, but they happen to enough percentage of the population. We have to stop and think here. What are we doing? Human sacrifice in the name of protecting people from diseases, but in fact we're causing others to even die. So, you know, read the package inserts on everything that is suggested to you. Every pharmaceutical, every vaccine that is suggested to you, because those adverse reactions are listed because they do happen to some people, and so everything is Russian roulette. And you could say, well, walking around not immune to stuff, that's Russian roulette too, because, you know, I live in Arizona, and now making the national news, we have this measles outbreak in Arizona. And I guess last I checked the news headlines, there's 11 out there. And in the first story that I read, it said Federal Immigration Detention Center in Eloy. And Eloy is about halfway between Tucson and Phoenix, you know, in the shadow of Picacho Peak, beautiful volcanic Picacho Peak. It's extinct, but it's, you know, it's a beautiful site, and it really breaks up the drive between Tucson and Phoenix. But you know, it said Federal Immigration Detention Center. So okay, that's illegal border crossers. They've come across from Nogales, about 100 miles south, and made it that far, and whatever. They're, you know, I know they're not detaining them very long, because those people did get out and expose the other nine people that have now been identified in Arizona with a measles outbreak. And then the Arizona Central, azcentral.com, I believe that's the Arizona Republic newspaper, or is that Arizona? I don't know which newspaper it is in hard copy, but on the web it's azcentral.com. And they put out another article, and, oh, they dropped the word immigrant, you know, for Federal Immigration Detention Center. They dropped it. Now it's just a federal detention center, because that's not PC. And, you know, this is a big hot potato in the election campaigns. And so we got to be PC. We can't identify what it is that we're fighting. And, you know, I'm not surprised that people coming into the country would be possibly malnourished enough to actually come down with measles when they're exposed to it. There is some data out there that measles, at least vitamin A, helps mitigate the symptoms a little bit. And I would speculate that if you're up on your vitamin A, that you could be exposed to measles and never know that you're exposed to it because you were healthy enough to not come down with it. That's my speculation on that. You know, it's certainly you want to be healthy. You want to have your vitamin A levels sufficient and all that. And so you're more resistant to any disease that's related to a deficiency in vitamin A. So I think there's carrots that have vitamin A, and you can always Google up which foods have that vitamin in them, which I like to do. And I plan my smoothies and make my blenders, and it's kind of fun to try experiment with the tastes of things, different vegetables that go well together. Like I really like carrots and celery together, and I really like the fruits. I like a citrus, a sweet, and berries in my fruit smoothies. And the vegetables, I like tomatoes, cucumbers, and maybe sometimes celery or carrots. Or, carrots don't blend as easily as tomatoes and cucumbers do, but what the heck. Anyway, so I have at least some of these articles right now on my website. And, if you want to follow along with the discussion, if you want to call in, the number here is 347-324-3704. That's 347-324-3704. If you want to join the conversation, click 1. Hit 1 on your phone, and I'll get a little marker that comes up and like, oh, this person wants to speak to me. If you just want to listen in, you can listen in through your phone or the Blog Talk Radio phone app, or if you just go to Mad Scientists Exposed. MadScientist.exposed, that's the website. I have the player right there on the site, and you can, listen in on your computer speakers or your headsets or however you usually listen to sound on your computer. So it's interesting topics. Let's see. I have there's other diseases that are headed this way with the with just the level of travel in the world, people fly and fly and fly all over the world and bring things back. And there's, immigration where people are making a one-way trip to the U.S. And there's this horrible sandfly parasite that is disfiguring. And it's very rampant in Syria right now. It's so war-torn, they don't have the facilities that they that they used to have, the hospitals and things are bombed out, and I'm sure farms are bombed out, so the nutrition level is down, and on it goes. And so some of these people are making their way into Europe, and some of these people are making their way into the U.S. or will be soon. And I have not seen an indication yet that that's communicable in the United States, but I don't think they know enough about it yet. And that's some kind of a parasite thing, which I guess you could think of all pathogens as parasites, but I think of parasites as a little bit bigger than bacteria and viruses. So I would think once that gets a hold of you, that's harder to get rid of. So there are things that you can do if it's in your gut. There's diatomaceous earth, and there's all these natural health methods that help you dispatch parasites. But there's also things out there, the Hilda Clark Zapper, and I've measured it several times in the past in previous episodes, and I just think it's a wonderful thing because you hold these electrical contacts, but the microcurrent is so small that a lot of people can't even feel it. I can't feel it. My daughter can sometimes feel it, and my mom can sometimes feel it. But the whole point is this microcurrent, it doesn't affect your body tissue, but it does kill many parasites, and particularly if you hold on to it long enough, a few hours or whatever. And there are some wonderful stories of recovery out there online. I don't know if it's been tried on this Syrian sandfly parasite yet. I just hope it is, because I don't know. Anyway, that would be the first thing I would try, because I don't know that nutrition can knock that out once it's got a hold of you. So again, the number here is 347-324-3704. If you have any comments on the measles outbreak or Zika or Guillain-Barre or any of that stuff, because not all of these are in the childhood vaccine schedule, which, as I know, is a real bailiwick for a lot of folks, because a lot of us have school-age children, and we have states trying to push this stuff down our throats. And if they're just going to pile on the vaccine schedule, we're going to have sicker and sicker children, because they are affecting people's immune systems, people's neurological systems. They are behind some cancers. And I had a really sad story this week. My kids had an older dog, my grown kids, and the dog, when you get a dog when kids are small, when the children reach young adulthood, that dog gets really old. And so a little over a year ago, they got a notice from the state, okay, this dog, a border collie who was, I guess he was 13, almost 14 at the time, he was due for his rabies shot. And by then I had read enough that the whole system made me sick. And I'm like, this is a geriatric dog. It's not my dog. It's their father's dog. He was the one, who's on the registration for the dog license. And he's in the law enforcement field, so he didn't want to, step over the law, the line there. Some people, when their dogs are that old, they'll just refuse, any more vaccines, or they'll start refusing from when they're puppies. Or if the dog is really old, they'll just say, look, the dog's dead. And that, then unless somebody, a neighbor complains that they're seeing a dog, I don't recommend lying to the state, really. I don't know. I think I'd move out of that town with that dog. I don't know. Anyway, we had a big, long discussion about, should we let them give the rabies vaccine or not? And it wasn't up to me. I was certainly pushing against it. And so he was too new to this subject, the actual owner of the dog. And he was too new to the whole thing and hadn't been reading what I had been reading. And so I was overwhelming him with information. And, of course, he listened to the people in the white coats and the authority figures, the letter with the seal of Pima County on it down there. But he did go so far as to ask the vet for an exemption for the dog, some kind of a medical exemption, because he was a geriatric dog, and why should he be receiving these vaccines when he doesn't go out? He's not going to mingle with the coyote population of the next county over. I guess they were having some trouble with some rabies in Cochise County. And that's the next county to the east, Pima County, along southern Arizona. And, the dog was leading a secluded life. There were no other dogs in his life. He, was kind of too old to go running in the park and be involved with other dogs or anything like that. But the vet said, no, the state of Arizona doesn't offer a medical exemption for dogs. And so he let him do the vaccine. And we just crossed our fingers. We didn't know what else to do. And a couple months later, he started with the seizures, and it was pretty awful. They had him, he started with the seizures. They took him to the vet, and, he spent the night overnight, and the vet threw so many drugs at him that she nearly killed him. And, just horrible digestive issues, horrible, he was paralyzed. He couldn't get up from these medications, and it was just a whole slew of them. And, he had walked in under his own power. He was having repeated seizures. He had like three in a day or something. So they had taken him in. And he walked in under his own power. And then all these drugs overwhelmed the dog so much. And I guess like old people, you can easily overdose a geriatric person on, just because they're more sensitive to the pharmaceutical concoctions. And so you really have to back off on the dosages for a lot of older people, and I expect for a lot of older dogs. And anyway, this dog went in under his own feet with perfectly functioning digestive system, and by morning he was paralyzed. He was a quintriplegic. He couldn't even lift his head, and just effusive digestive issues. I don't want to get too graphic, but, they had to keep towels on him and stuff. So they really, really badgered my daughter, who's an adult, to agree to put him down. And she just was adamant. She's like, no, He was, the only thing wrong with him when he came in was the seizures. He walked in here under his own power with normal stools, and you did this to him, you fix it. And they essentially refused. And, you know, once you, you know, steep up a dog on, or anybody on steroids, which is what they had him on, and a pile of painkillers and a pile of this and a pile of that, you know, then all of these drugs have to be weaned off. And so within a day, he was passing blood. And at that point, that scared the vet, and the vet agreed to wean him off the steroids that were causing it. And so in the end, all he was on was phenobarbital, but there was damage done. His back legs were weak for ever after that. And yes, you could build him up somewhat, you know, take him for walks, and he would get better, and he could walk. But there came a point where he needed help getting up. Once he was up, he could walk. He could take himself outside and do his business and all that. But once he came in and kind of flopped down, he couldn't get up again. Part of it was, you know, just not the strength in his back legs. Part of it was his legs would get tangled. And you have to untangle his leg and, like, push his foot back under him. And then he could get up, and or you'd have to lift him up. And it just went down and up and down the whole rest of the year. It was awful. And so he finally... they did get him some CS oil, which I guess is related to CBD oil. And, you know, they didn't, my kid's dad, who's the legal owner of the dog, he wouldn't agree to CBD oil because, you know, it's, this whole medical marijuana thing is too new to him. And he didn't want to have any question at his place of employment because he's in law enforcement and all that. So he did finally agree to some CS oil from the natural vet store. And that did help the dog. They could back him off the phenobarbital. And, you know, so he was on phenobarbital until recently. And the CS oil did help reduce the number of breakthrough seizures, they called them, from the phenobarbital. And, you know, but it was such a sweet dog and such... you know, such an affectionate dog, and just really, really attached to my daughter because she was the one that was really nursing him through this last year, just helping him get up when he needed to get up, you know, an old geezer dog. And anyway, so both my daughter and the dog recently had a case of food poisoning, and he couldn't keep down the phenobarbital, so he did finally come off the phenobarbital altogether. And she had him on CS oil, and he had some good days and bad days with the seizures. And then this past week he did pass away. So he was like 14 and a half, something like that, which I guess is pretty old for a border collie. We've had dogs live until 18 years old, you know, mixed breed things. And you know, there are spans, and I don't know if there are real statistics on vaccinated dogs versus unvaccinated dogs as to how long they live. I know you can Google up any breed of dog as to their average lifespan. But you know, that we don't know what it did to his brain. You know, the vets kept wanting to call it tumors in his brain, and maybe it was, and maybe they were caused by the rabies vaccine. I have to research it more because we were just dealing with the day-to-day issues of keeping him happy, keeping him comfortable, and my daughter's a saint. You know, just such kindness for an animal. So, and you know, and the animal loved her too, and you know, and her brother helped along with him. You know, they were building him, you know, trying to build him wheels so that he could roll himself along, but he didn't really like that stuff. And you know, they would take him for a walk sometimes with you know, karate belts tied around him. You know, he'd hold up his front legs, hold up his back legs on the worst days, and you know, earliest times after the seizures first started. And you know, anyway, so that's a sad story. You know, everybody's like, if we had to do it again, we'd do it a different way. I don't know how to defeat a state that says they don't honor medical exemptions for dogs, for a geriatric dog that has no contact with wildlife of any sort to be exposed to rabies. So it's a hard trial. We just have to move alternative medicine along better to find out, you know. And it could be the Holda Clark zapper to you know, just kill rabies if it gets into you. And one thing that did help him, the dog, quite a bit was she put him on magnesium supplements because we looked that up, and that was a really good thing for the dog. He had been eating a lot of dog biscuits at the time, and which of course decreased the amount of dog food he was eating. So that was But that particular brand of dog biscuit had all these minerals listed on the side panel, all these good things for dogs, and didn't list magnesium anywhere. And if you look it up, you'll find that one of the symptoms of magnesium deficiency is seizures. So I thought, oh, well, we'll solve this. And it did help. It did help reduce the amount of seizures he was having. He could go at weeks at a time without seizures as long as he's taking his magnesium supplements. And he was still taking his phenobarbital, but he didn't have the breakthrough seizures like he had when it first started. So anyway, that's the story. We lost our beloved dog this week, and I should take a break here. So I'll be back with you in a few minutes.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
My name is Dr. Eric Norman. I have studied vitamin B12 deficiency for over 35 years. I have developed the urinary MMA test to detect tissue B12 deficiency early, allowing treatment and prevention of permanent disability. B12 deficiency can cause anemia, but also neurologic problems such as spinal cord degeneration, paranoia, and dementia. B12 is found only in animal sources, so vegetarians become deficient. As people age, they may not produce enough stomach acid or intrinsic factor protein for absorption of B12 and become deficient. Up to 10% of seniors may have a normal serum B12 level, but a tissue B12 deficiency causing a 3 times greater risk for heart attack, stroke, or Alzheimer's. For more information, visit B12.com.
Does the media ever deceive the public?
A white plane, a very big jet, was flying an unusual pattern near the White House over Lafayette Park very slowly. It made one circle and then...
Are the media and their sources trustworthy?
New York State and New Jersey will get their first doses of the swine flu vaccine.
The H1N1 virus has made thousands of people across the country sick. Many have died. And some worry that it could grow into a full-blown pandemic.
Where does our mainstream media get their news?
All this enjoyment is brought to you by all the things sweetened with NutraSweet.
There's a reason why we want to own these guns.
We're going to have to come together and take meaningful action to prevent more tragedies like this.
That was President Obama Friday suggesting it is now time to reopen the national debate on gun control.
The media tends to march in lockstep with the government.
Who is responsible when the media fabricates the news?
When the public is constantly fed messages that are potentially leading us into a war that may not be necessary, it's not fair to the American people, and it's not fair to journalism, because the truth isn't being told here. We found out that CNN International is actually making money from the Bahrain regime. They are a customer of Bahrain. Bahrain is paying CNN International to create content that shows Bahrain in a favorable light, to then air that content on CNN International.
Join us online at williamlewisfilms.com. That's williamlewisfilms.com.
How would you like to make your work more enjoyable, be more creative and relaxed, all while sitting at your desk? That's exactly what my Serenity Rug has done for me. This revolutionary footrest, I can't even call it a footrest, because this thing encourages movement of your feet, which results in more blood flow. While traditional footrests advocate the motionless placement of your feet, I found that I'm unconsciously digging my feet into the long, soft grass strands of the Serenity Rug. It delivers an incredibly relaxing sensation that closely resembles the feeling of an exotic foot massage. If you have ever had a foot massage that made you want to stay there for hours, you know what I'm talking about. If you have not heard about the Serenity Rug, check them out at serenityrug.com and join the exclusive Serenity Rug community and enjoy a feeling of comfort and relaxation that most will never experience. They've sold out before, so I suggest you do your feet a favor and grab one of these. Again, that's serenityrug.com.
Hi, so we're back, and let me go to the phones here. Hello, you're on the air. Hi, can you hear me?
Hello.
Hi. So is
this
it?
Hi, I'm just trying to get this thing up here, trying to get back with you.
Hi.
So
you've
been
listening,
the mute button
huh?
on here? Oh, dear. Hello.
Hi, if you mute it, I don't think I'll be able to hear you.
Well, I'm sorry. I got the speaker down. I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear
great.
Me?
Oh, great. Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, you had the very poignant story about your family dog, your kid's dog. And I was just wondering, something that you said earlier in the show was the Hold the Clark Zapper. And I believe in that, and I've used that, and I've heard you speak about that before. And I just wonder, could that have helped at all with his situation? Or was it because it was seizures that you didn't want to try, or the kids didn't want to try the zapper because maybe it would somehow interfere, you know, with the, whatever this – I don't know. What do you think about
that? My daughter was trying the zapper on him, trying to help
really?
Him. In case it was – brain tumors or whatever, there are some stories out there about like a skull cap zapper that they're doing some successful research on with brain cancer. And, you know, she was trying it on him. She has a zapper and she was trying it on him. But, mm-hmm. you know, it's hard to connect the electrodes to a very furry dog. So, you know.
How could
she
do that? Use Velcro or something?
I think you have to wet the fur and maybe clip, you know, the little mm-hmm. little electrode clip to these copper tubes and you hold on to them. And it's possible she could have wet the fur and clipped them to the fur. And I don't know. I don't know that it would have helped. I really don't know because, you know, there's other things in vaccines besides the hopefully deactivated virus that they're injecting into you. And so, you know, that's mm-hmm. they're trying to make you immune to by making your immune system recognize it. But there are a lot of other ingredients. There's these metals and preservatives and formaldehyde and a big, long laundry list of stuff that on its own would be recognized as toxic. And if it was, if you spilled it in your house, you'd have to call a hazmat team, you know, mercuries and things like that. Supposedly, it's okay to inject it directly into your body. So, you know, it's possible that it wasn't a virus cancer in his head. It's possible mm-hmm. it was these heavy metals that accumulated in his head. From what I've been reading, you know, these heavy metals seem to be attracted to high fat areas, and your brain is, you know, really, really heavy. You know, it's largely made of fat. And so that's why these things accumulate. Mm-hmm. Animals' heads, people's heads, you know, and possibly do these brain damage things. I'm a believer that, you know, these vaccines are causing autism. And I don't think it's just the MMR vaccine because if you read the package insert on the DCAP vaccine, you know, it lists autism as a possibility or, you know, autism has been reported. And, you know, I've had numbskulls on, you know, Facebook arguing with me, well, it just says it. They list it as it happened. It doesn't mean it caused it. And I'm like, give me air. Hmm. You know, parents know what they're looking at. You know, you listen to the witness. Their testimony would be, you know, you'd listen to them in court if, you know, they said, oh, somebody shot my kid with a heavy metal bullet and that did the damage. You'd have to believe them then. You know, so, anyway.
You know, what's insane is that if someone's small child got the ingredients that are inside one of these vaccines and happen to ingest it, happen to eat it or something, including the mercury and other, you know, things are in there, you'd want to take them to poison control. You'd want to put them into emergency. But they feel that if they inoculate, if they use it in a shot, that it's perfectly okay. It's perfectly okay to give it to them in a shot, something that you would not in a million years want a kid to eat, you know, not an infant anyway, you know. It's a little crazy.
Yeah, and you know, it's parents are waking up to this. They're just waking up to it. It's just, you know, when you think things through, you're like, oh my gosh, how could we have not reached this conclusion before that there was something wrong with this? Mm-hmm. And you know, the vaccine industry got away with it when there were just a few vaccines. You know, when it was just, okay, a rubella vaccine, and what did I get when I was a kid? I don't even remember. I guess it was a smallpox. I still have the scar on my arm from the smallpox vaccine.
Me too.
I remember polio as a little syrup instead of a sugar cube. I didn't have the sugar cube. I remember a little syrup and a little squeeze tube. And they don't issue the polio vaccine anymore in the U.S. And, you know, thank God. But that was an orally received thing. And now they've come out with these flu mists, you know, for a flu vaccine that they spray up your nose. And so I suppose, I don't know if it has heavy metals in it or not, but, you know, your nasal cavity is awfully close to your brain. And I've never snorted anything in my life, and so I don't think I would start with that. I can't prove to anybody that the Clark Vex, the Clark Zephyr works, other than, you know, some, you know, incidental experiences, anecdotal, where, you know, my daughter and I went to visit some friends, and they had a relative in town who had a severe case of the flu. It was, you know, Christmas, and he had to come across state lines on a train, and he was visiting for a week, and he had the flu. And maybe we shouldn't have even been visiting those people, but it was the holiday. You know, these were good friends. And this guy was sitting at the table. He was obviously not feeling well. I mean, his eyes were glazed over, and he has problems with his eyes anyway, because he and two of his brothers were born in the 50s, and they gave their mother some kind of anti-nausea drug, which blinded all three of them. And they have several siblings. Yeah, he and two brothers, they're colorblind. They have super, super blurry vision, so they can, like, stick their noses on a computer screen and read it. And, you know, once they figured out what was happening, they didn't blind the rest of that poor family's children. But anyway, so he has trouble with his eyes anyway, but he looked feverish. His eyes were at half mast. He looked like he needed to go lay down, and he kept coughing and clearing his ears and over, and then he would shake our hands. It's like, so when we got home from that episode, we fixed ourselves, like, you know, big servings of garlic soup and zap. You know, we just sat and watched a movie and handed the zapper back and forth. And, you know, thank God neither of us got the flu from that, you know, because we're not going to go sleep. But, you know, and it's happened in the past where, you know, in that same orchestra I mentioned earlier, there was one of the guys that he would catch the flu before the big concert time every year. And he would be, you know, it would be a laryngitis thing or heavy, heavy flu. You know, he's also, you know, works in the court system and is exposed to a lot of people. So he got it, and he would stay home sick from work, but he would come to rehearsal. And then we'd talk to people, stand face-to-face with them, talk to people. And I'm like, what is this crazy, you know? The one year I did catch it from him, he had the laryngitis. He couldn't talk, so he had to assign somebody else to do the announcements for the off the stage at the concert time. But I went home and, like, 2 years in a row. And the one time I started getting this laryngitis, I just felt it creeping up in my throat and, you know, the pain and the scratchiness and all this. And I took, you know, I just had a jar of minced fresh garlic from the produce department. And I started putting it in my mashed potatoes and in my soup and stuff. And, you know, a little quarter teaspoon size, you know, with, you know, a couple, two or three times a day, whatever. And I got rid of it. And I guess maybe my nutrition level was well enough that, you know, the garlic, and that was a trick that a friend had taught me, you know, just take that friend would chew garlic cloves right off the bulb. But I didn't have the nerve for that. I just turned it into stuff. But I did manage, you know, after the symptoms onset, I was able to get rid of it. And so there are ways to do it. I'm never going to take a flu vaccine. Because I know people that, not only people got the flu, I had a grandfather who got the flu from the flu vaccine. And after that, you know, the doctor said, he died in the 70s. But, you know, at those days, they were acknowledging when you got a disease from a vaccine. And so he never got the flu vaccine again. He had a lot of heart problems and stuff. But now they don't really acknowledge that you get the flu from the vaccine. And you know, in the early 2000s, my own mom got pneumonia from the pneumonia vaccine. And because, I mean, she had the bill of health. She had gone into the doctor, perfect bill of health. He had listened to her lungs, everything. She was totally fine, gave her a vaccine. Within 24 hours, she was in the ER with the nurse ringing her hands that she might not make it. So we know darn well she got pneumonia from the pneumonia vaccine. And, you know, there'll be people, and they'll get on Facebook, and they'll get in your face. Some of these pro-vaxxers are really, really, and I think some of them are facial, that they'll talk to you and oh, you can't get the flu or pneumonia from the vaccine because they are killed vaccine. I'm like, you know what? I repeated that to one of my kids. And they're like, Mom, we learned in our high school biology books that viruses are neither living nor dead. They're just, you know, active when they're in your body or they're not. You know, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. You can't kill something that never lived. So I come back at them with that, and that kind of throws them for a loop. I don't know.
Well, who wants
to
put good material into their arm, you know?
Yeah, why inject it, you know? And I know that you like to do a lot of herbal things yourself. And so you know, and
well,
you keep garlic in and regularly cook with it, throw it in the crock pot, you know?
You know, I used to have two or three colds every year. And since I started using the Zapper, I think I have maybe one a year. Some years I don't even have anything. Last year I did get the flu, but a couple other people got the flu too, and it... But I don't believe I was using the Zapper at that time either. You know, I kind of go on and off the Zapper. Where I really believe that the Zapper has incredibly positive effects is not so much in what we're talking about so far, you know, like the problem with the seizures with the dog or the flu necessarily, you know, or the common cold. But what about its tremendous ability zapping parasites? That's where I first heard about it, is with parasites.
You know,
I don't know if I told you this, but at one point, maybe 2 years ago, I kept having these recurrent little twitches, like right in the right at the side of my foot, the inside part of my foot, and it gave me this creepy feeling like something was crawling there, like maybe I'd stepped on something and got a bug. Got some kind of little parasite or worm or something like that. And I don't know if I told you about this or maybe I did. I was using the Zapper, not holding them in my hand like I usually do, you know, but sort of between my feet. Actually, I put the copper cylinder, you know, one of the copper cylinders attached by wire under each foot and just left it like that for like about, you know, up to 10 minutes or something. And, you know, in about 2 or 3 days, all of that feeling of something creepy going on through my foot just totally disappeared. It totally disappeared. I just feel as though something that was there died, you know. And then I started hearing about all kinds of things, stories about people that were filled with parasites.
Yeah,
you know,
they're not going to hurt you.
Why don't you tell that story about, oh, gosh, what was it about parasites in a hospital or something? The hospital couldn't figure out it was parasites?
Oh, yeah, this was a relative. And she had a started bleeding. And you know, we took her, checked her in, and I guess the bleeding stopped. She went to sleep, and we finally realized we couldn't wake her up. And so we realized she was in a coma, and so they moved her to the ICU. And the ammonia level in her blood was way too high. And I guess that can happen if your liver goes bad. They kept saying, oh, she might have cirrhosis of the liver, so you know, we're going to have to do a biopsy eventually. You know, when we get her out of this coma, we'll, you know, do the biopsy, and maybe depending on the extent of the cirrhosis, then maybe she'll be on a list for a liver transplant. And
oh my gosh,
like, cirrhosis. She doesn't drink. How could she get the cirrhosis? Oh, it could happen with a virus. It could happen with this. You never know what could do it. And I'm like, there's something else going on. And they were like testing every part of her body, but where the bleeding had come from. And by the time we got her out, I had the feeling they didn't really want to know what was wrong with her. So anyway, they got her ammonia level down by having her take this lactulose, and I guess some kind of sugar syrup thing, some kind of funky sugar that I guess there's only two countries in the world where you need a prescription for it, in the U.S. and Israel, I think is what I read. And what most people take it for, I guess it's to defeat constipation. And so, but they were having to take so much of this that it would really, really, I don't want to get too graphic on the radio, but, you know, you had to be near a bathroom all the time.
Yeah. But she was so weak.
Yeah, and, like, this is your life, lady, for the rest of your life, unless you ever get a liver transplant. And, you know, they never did test for the – well, she just wouldn't put up with the biopsy on her liver. She just, you know.
I was just going to say that I remember that the doctor had a little dialogue with her. She said, I don't like this stuff, you know. And she said, well, you're going to be taking it. And she says, no, I'm not going to be, you're going to be taking it for the rest of your life, every day of your life. And she said, oh, no,
yeah.
I'm not.
She was very, very adamant in his face. But the way they had it, her choice was to be in a coma or inducing so much diarrhea that she could never leave the house. You know, self-induced, and it destroyed holidays. It destroyed birthdays. She couldn't go to church anymore. She couldn't leave the house and go grocery shopping. That was it. It was her and diarrhea, or the alternative was to be in a coma because of the ammonia level. And because this lactose stuff, it does something. It brings down the sugar level, or I'm sorry, it brings down the ammonia level. Well, she had enough of that. She issued a prayer to, and she has had miracles in her life, answers to prayer, absolute miracles, either a cure for herself or a cure for somebody else. Things have happened where just suddenly somebody would just suddenly wake up and they're not alcoholic anymore. Now, that's unheard of. If you're a heavy drinker and you go off cold turkey, you can die. But she has seen those kinds of miracles in her life. What? Well, in this case, she prayed to Mother Drexel, St. Catherine Drexel. And she happens to be in the family tree.
There's some family connection.
So that's how she chose her. Okay, so within a day, she saw this horrible thing in the toilet.
She passed it, right? It was parasite.
Yeah, it was a big, horrible thing. And so we Googled it up. What the hell is this thing? And it was some kind of a worm thing. And it's primary output was ammonia. That was its waste product, and that's what was driving her into comas. So she got off the lactose, and she stopped going to doctors who don't know anything.
Do you mean there was nothing wrong with her liver at all?
Nothing wrong with her liver, no. No.
So the doctors
totally
had her on the wrong diagnosis. That's terrible, yeah.
Well, I got the feeling the hospital didn't really want to know. And, you know, it's these kinds of things that make me really, really jaded about the whole medical world. You know, we didn't know about Zappers at the time, or I was just starting to read about them at the time. And once this issue resolved itself with the help of supernatural spiritual help, I think life is bigger than just this body. And, you know, people that pass from this body, they're actually still around looking out for us, and it's great love and, you know, for humanity. And they don't want people suffering like this, you know. I did get one of these zappers in order, and she and I use it on a regular basis to just make sure that nothing like that ever gets a hold of it. Because from what I've been reading, you can get a parasite anywhere. You can get it in a restaurant, you can get it in the produce department of your grocery store, you can get it digging in the dirt, gardening, anywhere, things, and you'll never know. There could be microscopic eggs, or however you inhale them, or however they get into your body, you know, you never know. And so, yes, there are herbal things out there that will take care of parasites. My experience is that, you know, they're not as fast. They're just not as best. You know, if you start feeling itchy or whatever, you think something's bothering, you start taking the herbs, well, maybe it'll work over a couple of weeks, maybe not. The zapper will take it out in a day. And, you know, you get rid of that, itch goes away. And, you know, but I do recommend, you know, yogurt or probiotics after you've used one of these things, because it will take out the positive gut flora also. And so then you got to load up again with the probiotics. And and the ogres and whatever, so like that. But as for human tissue,
it
doesn't.
I remember that when I used it myself extensively, that I actually felt kind of ill for about a day. And, you know, the little digestive upset and whatnot. And you know why? It's because there's a big die-off of those of parasites or of bad bacteria or whatever. And that's why you're very right. I've got to replace that with the yogurt or similar, you know, fermented materials or whatever.
Yeah, die-off of the bad stuff. And that's releasing toxins because it just died in your body, you know, these whatever floating around there. But the good stuff has died too. And, it doesn't hurt to take probiotics. There are people that they're more into probiotics than they are into vitamins as far as maintaining their health. Mm-hmm. And there's all these different modalities. I think, you know, God is good. There's all these ways of staying away from diseases, you know, that injecting diseases, it's kind of counterintuitive. Once you get into this mindset of keeping yourself healthy, and avoiding toxins and germs and stuff, then... Mm-hmm. You know, there's no turning back. You know, it's like you're not coming near me with that needle.
Suzanne, it's just come out in the news in the last 24. It's just come out in the news in the last 24 to 48 hours about this leishmaniasis or whatever. It's a kind of cutaneous leishmaniasis or something like that. It's prevalent in the Middle East. It's in Syria.
Yeah.
It's crippled hundreds of thousands of people. We haven't been told anything about this in the West, but it disfigures people. It's caused by a sand fly that bites them, repeatedly. And it's just in the Syrian area, but now it's expanded to places like Iraq and Turkey and Lebanon. And they believe that it's very possible that people could, of course, bring it with them across the ocean, you know, to Europe.
Yeah, now I don't know if you're getting it from sand flies. Yeah, and I did provide a link to one of the articles about that. If you go to madscientists.exposed, I do have a link to that.
But here's what I'm thinking.
But is it person to person?
You know, since it's from a sand fly and there's some kind of parasitic agent or something at work there, some kind of bacterium or something. Don't you think the Zapper would be one definite possibility because the Zapper works on parasites? The Zapper might really work on these things.
Yeah, and I said that earlier, I guess, before you came on the air here, I said I would love to send a pile of, you know, just thousands of these Zappers over to Syria. You know, I don't have the financial ability to do that right now, but, you know, the FDA is I don't think they're going to approve this stuff anytime soon, even though it's non-invasive, it's non-chemical, it's worth trying, but you know, I guess you know you have to do all kinds of studies and tests and studies to get things. Except it's legal in the case of experimenting on yourself, and that's what we're talking about here. Nobody's prescribing this for us. You know, if you want to experiment with yourself, you can get online and find these things. Now, they come and go on Amazon. Sometimes you can get them and sometimes you can't. I've bought the one from me for myself and my family member. I bought from a place in Canada. And then for my daughter, I bought one from another place in Canada. You know, you can get them programmable. There's different price ranges. And the price ranges seem to be related to how programmable is it. You know, there's a wonderful video on YouTube of Karen Allen. She was the actress in the first Indiana Jones movie that they made. And so, I get confused about movie numbers anymore because they do prequels and sequels and sequels and prequels. And so, you know, Star Wars 1 isn't what the first Star Wars 1 was. And Indiana Jones is like the same thing kind of. But she was in the oldest Indiana Jones movie. And after that movie, at some point, she got Lyme disease, and the doctors weren't able to help her. They kept putting her through courses of antibiotics, and it just wasn't doing it. Somebody recommended that she try out, go to this chiropractor who had a particular model of Zapper, and where you just sit with it. And she sat with it for like 4 hours, 20 minutes on, 20 minutes off. And the next day, her Lyme disease symptoms were gone, and they have not returned. And she bought herself the same model that she keeps saying for any time she's exposed to something like the flu or whatever is going around, you know, she just tunes herself up and just makes sure that nothing's taking hold. Yes.
Suzanne, I saw that video. She had suffered from Lyme disease for several years. And at first of all, it took years to diagnose it. And then once she got it, they kept trying, different courses of antibiotics and everything. Nothing got rid of the Lyme disease, nothing. And then she tried the Zephyr, just that 1 4-hour or 8-hour period or whatever it was. The next day, she was fine. It never came back, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that tells you something right there. It's not just a coincidence. It's not just an active imagination or something.
Yeah.
The thing
I
really
I have
works.
That link from, I have that link from, I think, the resources pages.
On my site,
the Mad Scientist Exposed site.
Suzanne, how's Allen spelled? A-L-L-E-N, Karen Allen?
I think so. I believe I have it. I'm pretty sure I have it on my website under video gallery under resources. I've got a few links there. Okay. I should find some more. Yeah, I do have that video link there.
And I'll have to go in a minute, but I just want to say, if you can, if they could try to tackle this cutaneous/myniasis with the Zephyr. And then the other thing, what about this god-awful Zika virus that's caused by mosquitoes, evidently, or maybe by the pesticides that the mosquitoes are being zapped with, you know?
Yeah, I mentioned that early in the show today.
Oh, did you mention that already?
Early in the show? Yeah, I was talking about, you know, there's different theories as to whether the microcephaly comes from the Zika virus, which has been around for decades without causing microcephaly until now, or is it coming from the pesticide that they're spraying to control the mosquitoes that women are then, you know, it's getting into the water system and they're drinking, and that's causing the microcephaly because it's doing neurological damage to the child in the womb, and it's doing neurological damage to the mosquito larvae. So, you know, it's doing what it's designed to do, which is do neurological damage.
Definitely.
But there's another theory, and my personal theory is some of these symptoms, well, if you read the DTaP package inserts, there's quite a lot of encephalitis that goes on. And, you know, is this brain swelling? And they are absolutely getting very aggressive with the DTaP vaccine with pregnant women, and including South America. And right around the same time they started pushing the DTaP vaccine, women started coming to term with these microcephaly babies. And so there's some theories kicking around about that. They really, really know what's going on. I, for one thing, I would not vaccinate if I were pregnant. I just wouldn't. I've been through pregnancies, and it's just like, that's too scary. You know, I know that it's a disease injection, and I just can't make that decision for the baby and the womb that's just developing. But also, likewise, I would not use a Zephyr if I were pregnant. I just wouldn't, because the child is too small. I know that my, you know, mature body is not going to react to microcurrents, but I would not take that chance with if I were pregnant. So if I were pregnant and I got exposed to the flu or whatever, I would eat garlic. I surely would eat garlic. That's like the old traditional way, you know. And when I think it was the bird flu was the big thing in 2009, and now that the bird flu H1N1, that's in every flu vaccine now. It's like they're bound to determine we're going to take that H1N1 injection. But they didn't have the supply when they were first trying to build up, you know, the vaccine supply for the world for this thing. You know, the story was that Ukrainians were just loading up on garlic, you know. You know, that's the old traditional way. They did not have colds and flu. So, I don't know. Sometimes traditional ways
are
traditional.
Well, in Romania and Bulgaria, the old gypsy countries there, they were eating lots and lots of garlic to keep away the vampires, too, you know. So that's supposed to be one of the
I guess it works,
huh?
Makes
it's not a bad idea.
Bad.
Well, that can keep away almost anybody if they eat enough of it, you know. Oh, listen, I'm going to go. But I found something just idly Googling. Actually, I'm not Googling. I'm using, what's it called? That other source. DuckDuckGo. DuckDuckGo instead of Google. But anyway, here's what I found. I found dogs love the Hulda Clark Zephyr. And this is under blog bestzephyr.com. It's about some Zephyr experts giving advice on parasite zappers, et cetera. And it says, Zephyr stories. This week we've been hearing from dog lovers. One person has a Zephyr strapped onto the back of a dog called Lucky Jack to rid him of heartworm. Isn't that something that they can rid a dog of heartworm with a Zephyr?
Wow.
And then they have something.
I mean, does he excrete the worms?
Yeah,
or
they
how
have
do
an
they...
illustration of it, actually, yeah. And then there's, and then they say that there's they have a shot here of seven Hungarian Vizsla hunting dogs, hunting pups, that are enjoying a zapprication session, So that's on the super zapplicator.
Yeah.
Is the actual machine that they're using. Yeah. But it's
the,
but the whole thing
is
on
some kind of a magnetic
thing
shield,
that one. If you just Google dogs hold the Clark zapper, something like that, or dogs Clark zapper, that would probably get you the stories, you know, to look at. So these are definitely being used by dogs. But the question is, would it have helped your family's dog that had seizures? And I'm thinking probably that would have been very dangerous. What do you think?
Well, depends what was causing the seizures. You know, whether it was just a clump of heavy metal collecting in his brain, or whether it was actually, the rabies virus collecting in his brain and causing a tumor. And my understanding is that my kid's dad, he is not going to do the autopsy route. He's just, you know, he has spent a lot of money trying to help the dog, because every time he goes to the vet, it's huge amounts of money, and particularly if at the hospital stay for one or more nights. And so he's not going to spend on this, because he has to consider, you know, whether he's going to, you know, have a burial or a cremation, or I don't know, whatever, or Pima County with animals. I'm not even sure anymore. But I know in the past somewhere, and maybe I can find it again. I should find these and link them from my website. I have seen a video of somebody using the Hilda Clark zapper on horses. And this lady, I guess she had.
Okay.
Yeah, I think she had an arthritic horse, and she rigged it up where she could just hang it around its neck, and the contacts were like touching his shoulders or something, and the horse loved it. It was just, you know, it saw her coming, and it knew what the zapper was, and it would just kind of like mellow out. It's like, you know, all of a sudden the horse would just relax when she turned it on. It just liked
really
it. So I don't know if that video is still out there. I'll have to look at it.
So anyway, but it's a fascinating subject. And Suzanne, I hope that you cover it again. I think there's enough material out there that you could cover several episodes, you know, of your show with different aspects of the zapper.
There are videos on YouTube, of courses with zappers.
That's great. Wow. Okay, I love your show. Thanks so much, huh?
Thank you. So this is all alternative stuff to have a great day. Thank you.
Bye.
All this alternative stuff to the mainstream medicine method out there. You know, because everything, even when I was in high school, they were telling me that every drug has a side effect. And so they weren't mentioning vaccines at the time, but of course, you know, everything has a side effect, and a vaccine is supposed to, quote-unquote, protect you for years to come, except they don't. You need boosters. And, you know, particularly pharmaceutical drugs, they have side effects. And I have horror stories from my family of things that, you know, do kidney damage and all kinds of it's hard to even describe. And so I've come a long way. It's like, you know what? These people don't really know what they're doing. And they're just, you know, they'll do research with government funding to find a product that they can market to the public. And maybe it'll work for a little while. Maybe it won't. The CDC just announced this week that, they announced a couple years ago that we were reaching the end of the antibiotic era. And, that they're not going to work anymore. They're going to be superbugs. And now, yes, it's true. We have reached the end of the antibiotic era. There's a poor woman in, I think they said St. Louis, who has a bladder infection that won't respond even to the most powerful, desperate antibiotic they can give her. So I don't think she's in the news anymore. I don't know how she's going to live. For some nutrients and boost up her immune system, and maybe her immune system could get a handle on it. But unless they go to one of these alternative methods of killing pathogens that are, you know, besides chemical antibiotics, you know, I hope she gets on, you know, search engines. I hope she's open to that kind of a thing, because when medicine runs out of answers, you start looking. And yes, there are cancer patients I've met that happened with. You know, the doctor said, okay, we're done. We've gone as far as we can go, and get your affairs in order because you only have weeks to live. And then what they do is they go out and they start searching the world, and they'll find there's several modalities that help them through, you know, herbalism, and nutrition is a big one. And then, because cancer is just a symptom, it's not actually a disease, it's a symptom of a disease. You know, whether there's various viruses that cause cancers, there are chemicals that cause cancers, and if your immune system is not nourished and strong, then you'll end up succumbing to the cancer, but the cancer is just a symptom that overwhelms you. Anyway, it's time again for a short break, and I'll be right back.
There are a lot of problems with Common Core. I don't even have time to go into most of them. But a step in the right direction would be to give local communities, teachers, parents control over their schools so they can design curriculums and standards to best meet the needs of their students and get the federal government out of education.
Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O, and on that farm he had some cows, E-I-E-I-O. With the horn on here and the horn on there, here on there, among everywhere, a horn on. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O, and on that farm he sprayed some crops, E-I-E-I-O. Here and a pesticide there, here spray, there spray, everywhere spray, spray, a small case here and a tight case there, here moan, there moan, everywhere spray, spray, old MacDonald had a.
New MacDonald had a farm. E-I-E-I-O. And on that farm the animal drummed.
E-I-E-I-O. With a pasture here, an open space there. Here they roam, there they roam, and never any more must.
Right now to YouTube, search on New MacDonald. Watch this video all the way through. You will be surprised. What a great job. What a great message. And then please share this video with others. An important message from our new generation.
Solutions to Delusions. How do you do this? Well, join me every Friday night on the Delusion Solution radio show from 6 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time and 9 to 12 midnight Eastern Time right here on the Freedomizer Network, where we will be discussing and discerning the times by making sense of current events and bringing to light much-needed topics. Our calling number is 347-324-3704 to listen in. Watching with your ears and listen with your eyes. I'm your host, Tara Dawn, and I'll see you there.
Hi. So we're back. If you'd like to join the conversation for the last few minutes of the show, the number is 347-324-3704. That's 347-324-3704, and then dial 1 to join the conversation. So maybe I can segue away from vaccines unless somebody has something to say about it. But the last big thing that I wanted to mention, that's the big thing in the news, is the really sad thing with the gorilla in the Cincinnati Zoo. And I've watched as many videos as I can find on it to try to find out what's going on there. And the thing that is really, it's really, really sad. The thing that's been shocking me is how angry people are at the parents, particularly at the mother. I don't know if the father was even there. My understanding was that she had other children there that she was also holding on to. And, this kid said he wanted to go in the water. She told him no, and he made a run for it. And other adults, and that part, of course, is not in the video. The part in the video is once he's down in the water was about a foot deep. And, yes, that gorilla took an interest in him and, at one point stood him up and hiked up his pants because they were sliding off him. And the gorilla took his hand, but when the gorilla took his hand, the gorilla went swimming, and that moat was about a foot deep, and apparently that gorilla used it as a water slide because he took his hand, the gorilla went down in the water, and boom, they both popped up nearly instantly at the other side of the moat, way around, the corner. You could barely see him. He was almost around the circle of the moat, and he took a couple of swishes like that through the water, dragging the kid behind him. Now, he was playing with the kid, he was gentle with the kid, he was holding the kid's hand, but I was stunned at how fast that gorilla moved. This 400-pound guy, just using the water as a water slide. And had it been my kid, I would have been absolutely terrified that, he would get water shot up his mouth and nose, and he would choke to death. That was my feeling as a mother watching this thing, that gorilla, and then by then people were screaming, and so he's kind of like looking over his shoulder, and then he just kind of disappeared out of sight from the camera. And we're told later that, yes, he climbed up the side of his enclosure, and he was, maybe trying to protect the kid from the screaming people up on the high level. We don't know. I've heard Jack Hanna, the animal expert, say they had no choice because, no, the gorilla was not in an attacking mode. You could even say he was being gentle with the child, but one mistake and that child could be dead. Yes, that I have heard the child has a concussion, and he'll recover over time from a concussion. That's not something that's easy to get over. I had a niece tipped over. Well, she wasn't driving. Her coach tipped over the golf cart, and she landed on the street, and she ended up with a concussion and was out of sports for a month or two with that. But, so it's not an easy thing to recover from. A good enough knock in the head, and you could be dead. And so even if the gorilla is being gentle, they were worried that if they shot him with a dart, he would have gotten aggressive, or he would have made a sudden move and accidentally killed the child. Maybe he would have fallen on the child at that point. 400 pounds on this, 50-pound kid, you could have smothered the kid to death or drowned him if he fell on top of him at the sedation. Now, I never saw footage of the shooting. I don't know if there is any footage of the shooting. But what has stunned me is how angry people are at the mother. And, some kids are easy, and some kids are not as easy. And I had kids that they assumed I knew everything, and I could see them no matter where they were. So if we got to a park with the homeschoolers, my kids assumed that I could see them on the other side of the park, and they would just take off. And, they would be together or whatever, but, and I'd go after them and try to keep them within sight. And so what I told them was, go any farther that if you can't see me, you're too far. You have to see me. Because if you say to a kid, stay where I can see you, they might not understand what you're saying. So stay where you can see me. And that's what I said to my kids when they were small. Because they wanted to run in the park, and they're just kids. And, but some of the anger that I've seen on Facebook, I got into a heck of an argument with an actual radio host who's back east. One of his other fans got on there, and he said, they should have you know, shot the kid instead of the gorilla. You know, he was really, really angry, you know, and like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. I said, you know, oh, well, she shouldn't have been having kids if she couldn't handle kids. I'm like, who can expect a permeable gorilla enclosure? It's just humanly impossible to expect everything and be able to account for everything. But there was about 50-50 in that big raging debate on that. And I heard Michael Savage today. He's absolutely he calls the parents trash parents, and so I'm shocked at his level of anger. And you know, sometimes I agree with him politically, and sometimes I just don't like the way he treats people. Anyway, he's got a raging debate going over on his page. You know, I guess he's got 250,000 responses, and so I don't know how to participate in a debate that big. But this other radio host is more like a sports host, and he plays back east on Long Island, and sometimes he fills in the morning show in Tucson. And so that's where I first heard him, and he's very funny. But he came out against the mother, you know, and he wasn't as verbal as Michael Savage, but anyway, he just thought it was the mother's fault, and people shouldn't be having kids if they can't control them. And it's like, that is such an old bailiwick, it just made me sick. I said, oh, how many kids do you have? Why don't you understand this situation? You know, and well, it turns out, no, he doesn't have kids. He just sits and passes judgments on other people and their kids, and sometimes it came out over the top as some of the people in his thread, it was really obvious that they're child haters and mother haters. The whole mother-child thing, the whole propagation thing really, really bothers them. They're part of this mindset that got started in the 70s with that horrible book, you know, the population explosion or the population bomb or something like that. And if you view mankind as a disease on the earth, then that's going to shape the way you treat people the rest of your life and shape all your attitudes. If you view mankind as the flower of the earth, that's totally different. And that's where you get, the inspired Bible. That's God speaking to us with love. And, you know, that's where you're going to get people that are going to stand up for the right to have children. And I know they have these horrible things in China where they'll enforce you know, it was a one-child policy forever, and they were forcing abortions on people who exceeded that. And now it's a two-child policy, but really they're doing the same thing. They're still forcing abortions on people because they're viewing their own population as their own enemy, which is absurd. You're either a friend to humanity or you're not. And there are people that are weaponizing vaccines and distributing them in Africa, and it's all documented, you know, with doctors in Africa that caught them actually weaponizing the DTaP vaccine because they want to control the population. And, there are people that they want to cure poverty by killing the poor, and they want to cure diseases by killing the people with diseases. And you end up with eugenics, and you end up with arrogance infiltrating the conversation. And anybody that ever says to me, oh, so-and-so shouldn't have had a child, you shouldn't have children if you think this way, I'm like, if you think the world is overpopulated, you be the first to leave, not me or my children. And so you need to go do something about it immediately. If that's how you feel, you're not going to impose your attitude on me and my kids. Anyway, so that's my take on it. I feel really, really bad about the gorilla. He was a gorgeous gorilla. And that child... and that family has to, you know, live with what happened forever. And you know, of course, the mother might blame herself for having shown up there with a child. But on the other hand, she couldn't have predicted that child would find a way through the professionally designed gorilla enclosure. There's no way she could have predicted that. And so, and the zoo thought they had secured that gorilla. So once the problem presented itself, I agree that there was no way to have gone any other way, but it's so, so sad. And I know darn well that they're going to redesign that gorilla enclosure. This is never going to happen again, at least not at that zoo. And all zoos in the country need to be looking at how secure their dangerous animal enclosures are, because I've been to zoos where there's wildcats down in the area below, and it wouldn't be hard for somebody to fall in And in fact, just before this guerrilla incident happened, there was an incident, and I'll have to find it in the news, somebody actually tried to commit suicide by jumping into a lion pit naked. And I don't know how that came out. I couldn't bring myself to watch the video or read the article. Anyway, so if people are determined enough, they might find a way to defeat these zoo enclosures. And so it's just a really sad world, and I regret that that this gorilla was endangered. And you know, there's also the story, well, he was part of the gene pool, and gorillas have lost this part of the gene pool. Well, there's a woman on the front page of Drudge today that she got court approval. She got court approval to retrieve her newly deceased husband's sperm and do artificial insemination on herself and raise children to this man. So if they're paying attention to the news, this gorilla doesn't have to be lost to the gene pool. They're perfecting the cloning thing. This gorilla doesn't have to be lost to the gene pool. They could raise him a twin brother, so or they could retrieve his sperm. But there's all kinds of things they can do. Anyway, that's it for today. Thank you for joining me, and I hope to see you next week.
Oh, wow. Kathleen, I missed your number. I don't think she had a question mark on it, though, but she disappeared. Yeah. Go in to get a, what am I going to talk about for an hour and a half? And then I, you know, get into the show, I'm like, I'm going to get it all in an hour and a half.